The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have a bunch of stuff to get to on this NBA trade deadline day. Devin Booker's agent is in the news cycle because he is looking at potentially becoming the new president of the New York Knicks. What would that mean for Devin Booker, who also represents Leon Rose, who also represents Carl Anthony Towns? That's a very interesting story to me. Kurt Warner's movie that is going to be made, that is interesting to me. Yesterday's signing day period, I'm going to go on a rant this morning about why the Pac-12 is in big trouble, more so than ever. The NFL players are meeting today in Los Angeles, and there is news on that side that I want to get to. Jude LaCava is going to be with us. Jude is leaving. Is he retiring or leaving Fox 10? We have to get to the bottom of this. I believe that he is leaving on his own accord. He is retiring his microphone, but it doesn't mean he's going to stop working. So there's different ways to, you know, skin a cat and all that stuff. When some people say, I'm going to retire, that means they're done working. Others are, I choose to move on. Like Bruce Cooper is moving on from Channel 12, from my understanding. He's going to be working on a high school project, and which is great for Coop. So what is Jude's plans? And we'll have a media podcast with Jude LaCava. That'll come up later this morning. Scott Peters was hired by the Cleveland Browns this last week. Scott, of course, has been on the show many, many times. Big believer in what he's been doing. Former Sun Devil assistant, NFL offensive lineman. He has been running heads up football, safe football. And the Cleveland Browns said, we want to hire you. And he's been in line coach meetings and coaching meetings. So he may just drop in. This may be one of those shows, will be one of those shows where all of a sudden I'm just going to pivot because we're chasing Scott. Our opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. When was the last time you took a deep, dark dive into your life insurance? When I say dark, it could be in the middle of the night where you're sitting there on your phone or in your tablet and saying, boy, do I have life insurance? What if something were to happen to me today? What would happen to the house? What would happen to my assets? What would happen to the loved ones? And what would happen to the kids and all of that? If you have not gotten your life insurance in order yet, log on to Sagicor Now. They have several different programs there that you can check out. Peace Assured is another one that is terrific in terms of your funeral costs. Check it out all at Sagicor Now. Be responsible, guys. Get it all handled. That's at Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Before I get into the trade deadline today and what's going on with the Suns, I want to go back to yesterday in National Letter of Intent Day. Yesterday was the second year now that we've had a late signing period. February signing day yesterday. It used to be that signing day was an enormous deal. There was just one signing day. Now there's one in December, and there's one yesterday. Yesterday's, to me, felt like a day where college programs on a higher level, the Alabamas and Clemsons, really were just, yeah, we've got things to go look at for 2021s. We've already gotten our class of 2020. And oh, by the way, if this kid didn't make it or something's changed the last 2 months, we can just go find the top of the top that is left over. I don't want to call it leftovers, but if you know, if you've committed, if a kid is committed in the spring or the summer or the fall to a certain college and they don't sign in the early period, the colleges are dropping them nowadays. I was having breakfast this morning with someone that would know, a well-known coach, and we were talking about what's going on in recruiting and how it is a much different space now. For those of you that are fans of Arizona State, yesterday was no different than it's been the last 20 years. It's been 20 years now since the team made a push towards the Rose Bowl, right? It's been a long time. 20 plus years since they made a push for the Rose Bowl. But every letter of intent day got all these great players. The tone that is being set, man, this kid's unbelievable. This kid is amazing. And every year they go to El Paso. So I am never one that gets too wound up or too high. I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't mean to sit here and pick on ASU. I could just as easily pick on USC. Yesterday, USC, this benchmark program, national name recognition, Clay Helton comes out and says, I've got nothing new to report. Front page of the LA Times today, UCLA in financial peril with their football and basketball programs. Loss of scholarship at UCLA because of the admissions scandal. You know, the doctor whose son couldn't play sports but somehow made it in on athletic scholarship. And so UCLA's lost scholarships and it's impacting the football program. So it's really interesting on how recruiting has changed for us as a company. Yesterday didn't feel to me as, I don't want to say special because it was special for a lot of kids yesterday, but there wasn't that sense of urgency and there wasn't that ooh or their ah. And I would even say this last December on Letter of Intent Day, yeah, there was some buzz. And yeah, there's interest by the diehard of diehard of diehards. That's like this many of you, okay? But by and large, the letter of intent days now, there's two. And I actually think there should be one in August. That's just me. Has changed. Eric, was yesterday, did it have a feel to you yesterday? Because you were immersed in it. You were at Notre Dame Prep and you were at Horizon and you were telling great stories and it's great for these kids. But now that there's a second letter of intent day, does it feel to you any different than the first one? And am I making some sense on this one to you?
It definitely feels different. I think yesterday's LOI day was for more of the NAUs and the Ottawas and the
Lake Forest
and the Mountain West schools and the Academy schools. Most of the big name players from the 2020 class in Arizona had already committed. So, but I thought, you know, I think it's necessary to have two. I don't mind seeing two.
Should there be one in August, though? So here's my point on, so do we need to do December and February? Do kids really need six more weeks?
Some do.
Some do.
Because like Matt Malloy, who is a linebacker at Notre Dame Prep,
yep,
who I featured yesterday,
yep,
he got offered by Air Force 2 weeks ago. It was his dream school. So, you know, He had no offers in the early signing period.
But I guess if you got rid of the February date, and a lot of these kids know in early August, in my opinion, at the high end, where they're going to go. So you go sign in August before the season starts. These colleges are throwing money right and left at parents and kids to go take their five visits. You can have five visits that are paid for. A lot of these times, I think kids just take the five visits to say, hey, man, it was cool. I went to Auburn. There's no way I was going to go there, but it was cool. I got a free trip out of it. And man, do they have a great facility, but I'm already committed to go to X, Y, or Z. If you took the pressure off the kid during the regular season and they sign their LOI in August, now there's the chance they go get hurt. If there's a coaching staff that was fired, I'll use Day-Day Hunter as an example at Chandler High School. He had said he's going to Hawaii. Hawaii blew out their staff. You actually can petition and go be re-recruited. You can do that now. But Todd Graham had to go meet with Day-Day Hunter and met with Day-Day Hunter's family for 2 hours. I can only imagine what kind of filibuster that was. And Day-Day Hunter, at the end of the day, even though Nevada was chasing Day-Day Hunter, decided to go to Hawaii. Why Arizona State felt that Day-Day Hunter wasn't good enough for them, I have no idea. You saw Day-Day, right?
Yeah, several times.
Hawaii? Nevada? I don't mean to speak ill of Hawaii or Nevada, but what am I missing here?
You're missing the fact that it usually only takes one Power 5 school to offer before many others jump in the boat.
Yeah.
And that Power 5 school just never came around.
Never came around. So there's got to be something else because from a talent standpoint.
Could be a speed thing. Could be a size thing. Yeah. But when you're arguably the best player on the best team in Arizona, you would think that you have potential to play at a Power 5 school.
Would you take Bijan Robinson or Day-Day Hunter?
Ooh, I would take Bijan Robinson because I think he's the greatest Arizona high school running back ever to stroll through the state. And the sample size is a lot bigger with Bijan. I mean, Bijan was great as a sophomore.
Sure.
And only got better as he got older. And he's just, they're kind of different backs. Bijan's bigger. Day-Day's probably a little bit faster.
Kadeem Carey, Day-Day Hunter, Bijan Robinson.
Bijan Robinson.
Still.
Yeah, with Kadeem a very close second.
Okay, so Day Day's back there.
He's
third. He's third.
He might not even be third, but that's not to say that he's not a great back. I don't know. I don't know why he didn't. I don't know why.
What about who South Point played? Level of competition, who Chandler played versus who South Point played.
Did Kadeem Carey play great schools when he was in high school?
That's true. That's
a good point. Was he a great running back at U of A? Did he play in the NFL for a little bit?
For a little bit. You're right.
I mean, greatness is greatness. Like, I don't know. Like, we've got, there are a lot of small school kids that go on to do great things, and they play in at the 2A and 3A level. So
I guess I look at yesterday, and to me it was, in terms of the big buzz schools, anticlimactic. I was very happy to see so many kids. I think it was the guy over at Gridiron, Arizona, who's, I don't know him, but I love what he does. He does just little things that none of us have the time to do.
And he gives every kid exposure, not just the big kids.
Yeah.
So
I think he had a note yesterday, and it was like 230 total kids from the state of Arizona that had signed that we know of.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And there will be more, because a lot of these kids don't have to sign with the – they didn't have to sign yesterday because the small schools just – I don't know the rules behind it, but yesterday wasn't like a hard and fast rule for the Lake Forest and some of the other D2 schools.
You have to be signed by the third signing date, which usually is a basketball signing date, which comes in April.
There you go.
So
there you go.
So that's where you have to have it done by.
I thought Darvon Hubbard's story was pretty interesting. I know that the Willow Canyon running back that Jordan caught up with, he was an Ohio State commit for a long time, and then that went away, and he really stretched out all the way to the end. He's going to Texas A&M, so all's well that ends well.
Yeah, no, I think to put a bow on this, the Pac-12, once again, from my view, is just playing way behind, and the Pac-12 network is at the middle of all of it because there's no distribution, thus there's no advertising dollars, thus when you have coaches that come along and they develop at an Arizona State or a U of A, and then Oklahoma comes along or Syracuse comes along and says, yeah, just come on over here. We'll pay a lot more than what you're making out there. And they do. It's almost like JV and minor league baseball in some regard. When we were kids, USC was a dream school to go to. A dream school. And now USC is just kind of like, yeah, because this generation has grown up watching nothing but Alabama kill people and Clemson crush people and LSU and Ohio State. And so you have players in our state. You have players in California. And California is made up differently now. People are fleeing out of California. Participation rates in football are dropping in California. They're dropping across the country, but in particular in California. So you may say, well, we have 39 million people in the state of California. Well, it's not as deep as it once was. ASU is sitting over here saying, you know, Antonio Pierce, it's fine. You know, we're going to own California and we're going to go take these guys away from Oregon and so on and so forth. Well, I don't know. Guys are going to Clemson and they're going to Ohio State. And until you get out of the Sun Bowl rut or the Vegas Bowl rut, you're just somebody that's talking a big game and you haven't accomplished anything yet. That's just a fact. It's a fact. Get back to me next November when games are played and the bowl schedule comes out. We make entirely too much out of this to a point. I get there's interest. And I'm interested in some of it. But, man, it's more about how many kids are being placed rather than look at how great we are. And then every year it's 6 or 7 wins. And it's the same old thing. Well, you know, it's going to be the 2016 class. Or it's going to be the 2018 class. It's going to be the 2019. And you just sit here and say it's been 20 freaking years since you guys did anything. So just be humble. NFL players meeting today in Los Angeles. I'll get to that because it does impact those of you that love football inside and out. Also the Suns on the just trade deadline and much more as we continue on. So today is a big day in the NFL, and you're thinking, Brad, it's February 6th. What do you mean it's a big day in the NFL? Look, you guys love to consume the product. The ratings for the Super Bowl were off the charts. Forget about for a moment that the halftime show was the highest rated portion of the game. It had more people watching the halftime show than watch the game itself. That's the way it works in our country. I bring this up today that it's a big day because the Players Union today is meeting out in Los Angeles. The NFL is coming into the final year of their collective bargaining agreement. I don't know about you. I've been through labor wars before. It's not fun. Our buddy Rick Neuheisel, who we've had on here on the show before, I remember he was a replacement quarterback in 1987 in San Diego, and he did an endorsement for the Chargers for account temps. It was pretty funny. It was not funny going through the lockout because it left several players bitter, angry. I saw it was my first taste really of seeing labor stuff. Having been in this business now for 30 plus years, the labor side of things is always tilted towards the owners. The owners have the upper hand on the players. That's just the way it is. I get it. They're the owners. They're the big ballers. They're the ones that control the checks. I look at the players and say, these guys are getting beat up. They don't have great medical. They really don't care about concussions, even though they say they do. And in fact, the concussion issue, try to go find stuff on websites now about what the NFL is doing. And I would say you'll find very, very little on it. The owners always get their way. That's just how it goes in sports. It's how it goes in business a lot of times. Today, the players' union, 32 players, are meeting in LA to talk about the length of the season being increased to 17 games. Eventually, it would go to 18 games, 17 games starting in 2021. I myself don't get it. I myself look at it and say, do you really need another week of this? But the numbers don't lie of people that sit there on a Sunday from 10 a.m. in the morning in Arizona or 11 a.m. in the morning all the way until 10 o'clock at night and don't move and just watch football all day. They cannot get enough of it. With gambling becoming legalized in our country, people want more and more football. This is not an attack on the sport. It is really about the workforce that's out there. If you watch an NFL game, around November, December, you're going to see a bunch of guys you've never heard of because the workforce simply isn't deep enough. And so when they talk about player safety, it's pretty laughable in my opinion. August has become a complete joke. These four games that they play, it's been bad football and abusive players for years and years. Then they don't play in August, and then they get hurt in September. And so the players today may vote on this, but they're talking about it today. And if you want to see labor peace take over, I think Richard Sherman talked publicly about how hypocritical the league and owners were behind going to a 17-game season when they talk about player health and player safety. And he's dead flat right. Jude LaCava is next. Now we turn our attention to Jude LaCava. Jude and I first met when I was working in San Diego, and he would come out there with the then Phoenix Cardinals, and they would train. Joe Bugel was the coach here. Dan Henning was the coach out there. We would be in La Jolla. Jude was very nice, very gracious, would come up, and we'd chat, and we started to know one another and like one another. And he said he was leaving at one point to go into television. This was in 93. And somehow, some way, I ended up coming to Phoenix after he left to go to television. Jude announced recently that he is leaving. Are you retiring or are you quitting? Are you moving on? Are you what are you doing? Are you retiring or leaving or quit? What are you doing?
I am retiring.
You're retiring.
I am officially retiring, Brad, and I couldn't be happier about it. I mean, I people have asked me, okay, you know, what's the real reason here, and the reason's simple. It really is. It's a lot like the athletes we cover, and that is when you've done the best you can do, it is simply time to pass the torch and move on. And after 40 years since college and grinding away in a demanding business, I've opted to maybe step back and travel and finally, as the young kids today like to discuss, take my gap year. So I'm looking forward to it, spending time with family and travel, and finally after 40 years since 79 calling it a career, and I'm excited about it.
You're not slipping, by the way. Not that you need to be told that.
I don't know about that.
No. I mean, you know that there's always that, well, he just doesn't have the same juice, or he doesn't have the same enthusiasm. Look, it's brutal in our industry where people will say, yeah, that guy looks tired. He's this. This is all about, and I think I can say this and just shut me up if I'm wrong. This has been coming. This is not something that you just woke up one day.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, Brad. I mean, I think that, the other part of it, though, is like I've said, it's compared to an athlete. if you really truly know in your heart you've done the best you can, then it's time to move on and pass the torch. And I think that's the thing. Listen, there's no question, you know, local TV is demanding. You want to get it right. It's faster than ever before because of Twitter and Facebook and all the other media outlets. But I think the bigger question really is it's not my style to kind of just hang on and go through the motions. I don't have to do that. I don't want to do that. But conversely, there's so many people that were a big part. I was just a small part of a department that, you know, Mark Malrich, Jeff Lake, Richard Sines, Brad Gass, fabulous sports photographer. Before that, Clark Frederick, Neil Wolf, Freddie DeLuca. I mean, there were really a lot of people that helped teach me the TV business. And, you know, that was the biggest thing, is that there were a lot of, if you remember, is this guy going to be able to have a sport coat? Is this guy going to have mustard on his shirt? I mean, there were a lot of interesting questions as I went from radio to TV. And, you know, I've been very fortunate. I mean, I had a news director in Doug Bannard that absolutely allowed me to take a lot of editorial control and make judgments based on what we were doing for many years on Sports Night and our coverage of big stories. So I think it's, you know, I've considered myself very blessed and very lucky to have had a 40-year run in the business.
Sure.
And 31 years in Phoenix. And to me, you know, when you start getting a little bit older, and you'll find this out yourself, you want to step back and smell the roses and do some other things. And that's really what I'm truly excited about.
Okay, when was the aha moment? Was it after a 10 o'clock at night show?
When was the moment? I think this past fall, it just really kind of hit me like, okay, you know, it's you're enjoying it, but it's time. And I think, you know, it's football is always a little bit more of a demanding time. And, you know, but as I said, you and I've talked. I mean, I felt that, you know, the last thing I want to do is hang on, and that's just not my style. So, yeah, I think really over the last year or so, but in particular this fall, but I'm very comfortable with my decision, and I can't tell you how supportive the folks I work for have been. And like I say, you come to the realization, and I can't say this enough, that if you can't do any better than what you've done, then you got to move on.
There was a time, we're talking about Jude LaCava, there was a time, because we are really busy in this business. People think that, well, if you don't see someone for a while, you really must not like them. Jude and I, it's fair to say, I would consider you a good friend, and that there are times where we send texts, or here's things that we're working on, or here's what we don't like in the industry, or so on and so forth. There was a time where I met your bride and you out of work entirely at Children's First Academy. And my wife said to me when we drove home that night, she's like, now I know why you've always admired him. Man, that guy is really nice. That guy is really cool. And I said, yeah, but he's burning it 100,000 miles an hour, and people don't realize how much energy you put into this. When if the Suns trade Kelly Oubre at 10:45 this morning, Jude has got to work on this all the way until 11 o'clock at night tonight, after they put him on the air for yet another hit on what went on. And it's that way every day. And I'm not saying this for those of you sitting in cubicles that are listening and watching and saying, oh, tough life. No, from a family standpoint, it's hard to balance. It's really hard to balance a relationship and to keep things moving.
Well, it is. And I can't tell you how many times I've said to my wife, who I have to salute as a very tolerant, supportive wife, that, by the way, you know, Stanford's in town tonight. I got to get over to Sun Devil Stadium for an ASU football game, or I got to get, there's a big game with the Rockets coming to town and the Suns. I mean, you know, you have to have a support system within your family, or it never works. And then there's conflict. And I can't say enough great things about my wife, who put up with an outrageously difficult schedule. But on the other hand, I look back, Brad, and, you know, back to when you took over. I mean, that final year with Barkley and the Suns was absolutely unforgettable. That's really, I think, when the town grew up to become a major market. And then the remarkable run of the 2001 World Series against the Yankees. The people that you have a chance to meet along the way, getting to know Jerry Colangelo, getting to know the late, great Cotton Fitzsimmons, mm-hmm. people that really had a positive impact in my life, in my career. Those relationships will never stop. And I think the colleagues that I've met, you, of course, included, it's been a fun ride. And I'm very grateful for listeners and then viewers that at least had a decent amount of respect for what we were trying to do these many years. But, you know, the last thing you want to do, it's kind of like that athlete that is, you know that they don't have what they used to have. You don't want to hang on. And, I think that the timing was right for me. And, you know, we've got some other plans coming and some foundation work that means a lot to me in the fight against cancer. So there's still more to do, and I'll be coming to the games and whatnot from time to time. I just won't be working the grind, which, you know, is somewhat of a relief, to be honest with you.
Well, and you're also getting out of this business. Let's be honest, Jude. The amount of guys that you and I have seen through the years that go through health issues because the hours aren't good, the eating habits aren't good, the sleep patterns aren't right, the depression, the anxiety, the stress, the heart issues, all the things that people don't see. All they see is the guy that's at the grocery store buying broccoli, and it's like, oh, what are you doing here? I'm buying broccoli.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and so you're getting out rather than potentially going through some health stuff. I don't recall you going through any health over the last 30 years since I've been here, and it may have happened,
but
you're fine.
Knock on wood, I feel pretty good. And, you know, I think that, you know, I look back at, you know, sadly, a guy that I really liked and was a good friend, Bill Denny. And Bill, you know, he finally gets out, and then he has a major health issue and passes away a few years later. And I look back at, you know, some of the people that you and I knew through the years, whether it was Lloyd Herberg, his battle with cancer, the tragedy involving Steve Schoenfeld. I mean, these guys were friends. They played a big role in my success in terms of the panel discussions. We used to have them down on a regular basis on our sports night show. So, you know, that is a factor. I mean, you know, unfortunately, my dad never had a chance to enjoy retirement and then passed away at the age of 72. And, you know, you work for a reason, and that is to eventually hopefully step back and have some time to enjoy some of the finer things in life. But I can't say enough about the experiences here, the friendships, the relationships, the people you meet, the events that we were fortunate. I mean, to think the Cardinals made it to that Super Bowl back in Tampa, I still, that was just a remarkable run by Kurt Warner. So many great events and so many opportunities to really see this town grow up. I don't think, Brad, and I think you'll attest to this, I don't think we'll see another 30 years from the late 80s on where we saw the remarkable growth of a city that became a major sports mecca, from the arrival of the Diamondbacks to the World Series to the old Suns before Robert got a hold of them. You know, the arrival of the Arizona Coyotes, you know, Arizona State's resurgence in recent years here with Herm Edwards. You know, there were so many fascinating stories to cover that I consider myself extremely lucky to have had those opportunities.
Yeah. Well, we might go 30 more years before the Suns make the playoffs, but that's talk about Jude LaCava. The one athlete that you could never figure out, you look back on it and you say, I could never break through with this guy. We just always butted heads. It was oil and water. Who was that guy?
Well, you know, it's funny. I really had an interesting relationship with Tom Chambers. And I the irony is that Tom and I are friends now. But, you know, the tough part about what was happening with Tom is that towards the end of his career, he just was not the same. He was such a prolific scorer, and he really was a big part of the turnaround of the Suns when they signed him as the very first NBA free agent. But when he was starting to lose it, we had our conflicts. It was, we butted heads and then some. And, But the irony is now he's working in media, and I think he does a fantastic job. He's critical when he has to be. You know, certainly when I look back at the interesting relationships, I mean, Charles was always the most, I mean, he was, you know, Chris Rock and High Tops. I mean, he was just hilarious. He played a big role, I think, in the maturation of this sports city. I think that, you know, Randy was always, you know, especially when he was pitching, he was at times tough to deal with, but just a brilliant, brilliant talent. And then Curt Schilling, I think, always had his agenda, even to this day. Not that I didn't respect what he was able to do in the many postseasons that he was a part of, and I do think he will make his way to the Hall of Fame eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just, you know, kind of a brief rundown. But there were so many really interesting guys to connect with, whether it was Luis Gonzalez, Dan Marley, and guys that I had had a history with going back to, ironically, covering him when he was at Central Michigan and then seeing his iconic rise here in Phoenix with the Suns and now at GCU. So, you know, those opportunities are golden. And those are the memories, Brad, that I will cherish forever. I mean, I just think that those unique connections, Torrey Lovello, just a really, really good guy to deal with. And, you know, those types of connections and relationships won't stop in my book. And I feel honored to have had those kind of connections to a lot of really good people. Kurt Warner, you're not going to find a better guy in Kurt Warner. Larry Fitzgerald, just what he's been able to do through his foundation and the type of person he's been. So, you know, it's a long list, and it is a privilege to have been a small part of just covering those guys.
The guy that you look at and say, wow, he had it all and it didn't happen for whatever reason.
Charles Barkley. Charles was the most athletically talented, you know, just to see this guy under 6'5", if he wasn't so much the life of the party, I truly believe he would have won at least a couple of NBA titles. But he was the life of the party. He was absolutely hilarious at times, the most entertaining athlete I have ever been around.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the only downside there is that he had so much talent. He could take over a game, and yet I think there were times when we know he didn't really practice all that much. There was so much more upside. I think Barkley could have won at least a couple of titles, and I'll always wonder about that for sure.
Let me throw a couple names at you. Richard Dumas. When I say that name, what goes through your mind?
Sad, because he was so talented, and we know the demons he had to battle. I think Richard, man, he came on fire, and, you know, to my knowledge, just really couldn't get over some of those off-the-court issues. But a really, really talented guy that had a tremendous skill set. And that was sad to see, because I thought that kid could have been a perennial NBA All-Star.
Pat Tillman.
The most moral and ethical human being I've ever been around, and the most humble. He was so tough to get an interview. I mean, we had to I worked almost 2 years to try and finally get him down on the station. But, you know, for somebody that didn't necessarily have a belief in God, he was ironically the most moral, ethical athlete I've ever been around, period, bar none. I mean, he was just the real deal, and never wanted the attention. Never wanted any type of publicity. The most honorable athlete by far that I've ever been around, and we're lucky enough to get to know a little bit. He was not easy to get to know.
A couple other names. Bruce Snyder.
I really thought Bruce had one of the greatest seasons in college football history, and, you know, it was rough at the start, but that Rose Bowl year and that Rose Bowl team, those guys on that team actually, and, you know, you're not supposed to say this, they actually became friends, whether it was Paul Reynolds or Jeremy Stott or Jake Plummer. That was an unbelievable, undescribable ASU football season. that I will absolutely never, ever forget. And Bruce was, you know, one day at a time. I look back and I say, man, that guy was just, he had a great staff. He had a tremendous staff. Some of those guys are even coaching. I think Phil Snow just became the D coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. Kent Bear is still coaching up there in Montana. Great staff, tremendous recruiter, and just oh so close. I don't know if they'll get that close again of winning a national championship. That Ohio State game at the Rose Bowl was unforgettable. And Jake really put together one of the most remarkable years for any college quarterback. That was one of my most favorite seasons of all time. Was the 96-97 season.
The story that made you emotional, you actually cried about it.
Well, I think, you know, it's what's really tough about what happened with Kobe. I got emotional with it only because, you know, you never really, we saw him grow as a guy that was such a dynamic parent. You know, and that was not the case early on in his career. I think it's the tragedy of being gone instantly in a horrific crash that just it breaks your heart. There were a lot of stories like that. I think I have to tell you the loss of Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, attending that funeral service up there in San Jose is something I'll never forget. And then getting to know the family to some degree, you know, that was just devastating. Pat's impact, thankfully, through his widow is still being felt today. So that was a tough one because he was the real deal. His humility and who he was as a person was the most genuine by far of anyone I've ever been exposed to.
Before I get you out of here, so what's next? You talked about I'll let you talk about breast cancer and foundation.
Sure.
Because that's what's next for you.
Well, the one thing that you know, there are events in a life where you never forget. And as a high school kid that just all he did nonstop was play basketball back in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I, at the age of 14, I was told my mom had terminal cancer, and she said, I'm going to make sure I graduate from high school, which she did. But we basically signed off on her becoming an experimental patient in Bethesda. So we would take flights back and forth to D.C. and get her back from these unbelievably heavy chemo sessions. So as the years went by, you know, and my wife lost her very, very best friend, we said, we've got to at least try. We're by no means experts, but we've got to try to get in this fight. And Dorothy Foundation became that platform. And interestingly enough, right here in our own backyard, there's a scientist that can predict cancer within a very, very affordable one drop of blood test. And by the way, it's once it gets to market, less than $100. So we've raised over $100,000 to support his test, and we hope someday soon that immunosignature test by Dr. Stephen Johnston will get out there, and it will be a precursor to your annual physical where you can simply take a very affordable test and find out if you have cancer before it ever becomes cancer. So that's one of the projects we're working on, and hopefully we'll see the fruits of that labor in the not-too-distant future. That's, as I said, there are events in a life where you never forget.
Sure.
And then you have to hopefully take action. And that's our platform, and we're staying with that for sure.
So you'll be running the foundation, assisting your sister. Walk through this part of it.
Yes, I think, you know, whether I like it or not, and just based on the contacts, I am going to keep pushing forward with that work. Mm-hmm. And that's also involves my wife, Jill, and my sister, Sandy. So, you know, that's something that we're not going to give up on. We've put a ton of work into it. And that is something that's close to my heart. And, you know, when you look back, Joe Mack, you know, you look at Lloyd Herberg, you look at some of, you know, even Bill Denny, you know, cancer has affected so many people's lives. And to me, as a lay person, it's not about just what I know. It's about finding the person in the know, the scientist, the researcher, that can hit that home run ball. And that's what we're banking on, Brett.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. You can do any media at all? You're just going to walk away 100%
of it? It's not on my radar right now. I mean, who knows? A year from now, I'm definitely going to be taking some time off. I'm really looking forward to that, kind of recharging the battery a little bit. It's been 40 years. Who knows down the road? I'm not. You know, you never say never, but it would probably be in a different venue of sorts. You know, who knows what that might be? But right now, it's not on my radar. I just really want to step back, recharge, and go from there.
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you, come over here. We'll figure something out.
I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's
in some. You need a break. You do need a break.
Yeah. There's no doubt.
When you come up for air, just know that there's something over here if you want to do something. So.
Well, look, I have valued our friendship. And, you know, you and I have talked about a lot of things personally, professionally, and you've been a great supporter, and it's been appreciated. And there's been a lot of colleagues that I'll be very close to through the years, and a lot of them from the print media, a lot of them I've worked with, Mike Jarecki and others. And
yep.
I will say this, I think that Richard Sines is going to do a fabulous job. I mean, I think we still have created a nice tradition over there at Fox 10, and with the guys that are there now moving forward, I think and I hope that it will continue.
Is that the succession plan? Richard will be the replacement for you permanently?
Yes, he's coming off a tremendous week at the Super Bowl in Miami, and you know what that's like when you're on the road for 8 days.
Yep.
He hit it out of the park, and there'll be some interesting additions coming along, but I think for the most part, you know, everything's in place. I mean, when you put a good portion of your life at one place, you want to make sure that place continues to be competitive, and I think it will be in many ways. So, it's the old line. You want to leave a place better than when you found it, and I'm happy to say that I think that's the case. And the guys there right now have a tremendous passion to keep moving forward. Mark Maurich has done a phenomenal job in a short period of time with his organizational skills, and I expect the department to continue to thrive.
All right, one little bit of advice to you, and I only am giving you this off of talking with guys that have pulled the ripcord on the business. When there is that first story, okay, I'll even go into my space over here because we have freedom and flexibility and we can do it when we feel like it and we know what's important, all that. But when there's that first story, if it's Fitz deciding that this is it or whatever that first big story, and you get the itch and you get the withdrawals and you're like, I gotta, hopefully you have the people around you say, no, this is what you're doing now. I'm just going to get that.
Yeah, I got a wife that will insist on that, and I'll probably be up in Sedona, practicing yoga or something.
I mean, Good stuff. I appreciate your time, and it sounds like the next chapter is going to be a great chapter, so we'll stay in touch.
Hey, Brad, thanks for everything. And you know, there are very few people, and I want your listeners to understand, there's very few people that I've connected with that I consider a very, very good friend. What you've been able to do, you and your entire staff, in creating a impactful media source, especially with the work you do on FSN, is great, man. Keep up the good work, especially the high school sports coverage, which is the best in town. And you'll always be a friend, my friend.
You got it. Stay well. Be in touch. See you, Jude. Thanks.
Take care.
There is Jude LaCava. You know, weepy. Fox 10, well, at least I did. Fox 10 sports director and good friend of the show. He is retiring. We had to get that out and appreciate his time. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.